G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events. This is 2020 on Vision.
Well, Ashlyn Vice is with us today, the Australian Christian Lobby State Director for South Australia. Ashlyn, a special welcome along to 2020.
Thanks, Neil. Good morning.
Ashlyn, this is all over the news today. There were lots and lots of rallies around cities and towns over the weekend. A gendered violence crisis. Any thoughts from you on the overall focus on this, which clearly is a crisis?
Yeah, I noticed all over the news those rallies and that some of the speakers were calling this gendered violence a national emergency and calling for a response from the government as if it was a national emergency. Look, I think it's always, unfortunately, being the case that women do experience higher rates of violence in relationships, and it is very sad that in a country like ours we are seeing an increase in that violence. What my heart is, I think, behind this issue is that it's clearly we're not doing something right when it comes to addressing a solution to this issue. And I think we have to, as a nation, look to how we are allowing things like pornography to be freely accessed by particularly young boys. And when you look at the content of that pornography, how it is violent. And I think what is shown on, well, you know, I don't look at what is shown, but, you know, I know that that violence is encouraged through that content. So my hope is that this will be a wake-up call for us to put restrictions on that content. You also got to look at what's going around the country with the push for transgender women to access women's spaces. I think when there's a real concern for women's safety, this is not the time to be allowing men to access women's spaces. So I guess that's my comment on that issue. And I hope that we can combine these two issues together, and really advocating for women's rights. A part of that is advocating for women's spaces and those protections, Neil.
Women's safety really high on the necessities there. And of course, interestingly, and I'll get your thoughts here, Ashlyn, I mean, there were hopes that a new generation of young men coming through might be able to be taught some levels of respect for women, with the assumption that the older generation didn't have those levels of respect. This seems to have failed right now. And as you mentioned, issues around pornography and various other ways that the culture is changing, there is a real battle ahead, isn't there?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've been pouring out so much money into things like the Respectful Relationships program across the nation. And those programs are aimed at addressing this issue. However, I think research is now suggesting that they're perhaps not working in the way that we want, addressing the issues around consent in schools. We also know that ideology is creeping into these programs. So gender ideology, and quite explicit sexual teaching. So I'm just not convinced that is a solution to teaching our young men respect. I think, yeah, as you said, we've got to look at what they're accessing at home on their own devices, and also returning to what Christian values are in relationships as well, the sanctity of relationships and respect. So it's certainly not a isolated issue. When we see violence in relationships between men and women, we've got to look at broader cultural issues and indeed what kids are accessing.
As we've just heard in the news, the Prime Minister's planning a national cabinet meeting, and in response to, you know, the concerns raised by premiers in New South Wales and Victoria, you've got to keep talking about these things, but you hope that talk translates to some effective action, don't you?
Yes, that would be my hope, certainly.
Let's talk through some things close to home for you. You're the South Australian State Director for the Australian Christian Lobby. The CAS review, we've been talking about this a little, need to talk about it no doubt some more. Momentum in Australia for restrictions around puberty blockers. The CAS review had all sorts of findings which really shone a big light on the issue here. Remind us of some of those things that came out of that CAS review.
Sure. So look, some of the key findings that came out of the CAS review, and just to remind our listeners, that is an independent systematic review of evidence that was released out of the United Kingdom a couple of weeks ago. It was commissioned by the UK's National Health Service in 2020. Final report has just been published in response to some concerns around the rising number of children seeking gender treatments and also the lack of evidence around things like puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. Some of the key findings of this report is that the rationale for early puberty suppression is quite unclear, supported by very, very weak evidence, so much so that there is no real basis currently for clinical decisions or informed consent. So the kinds of studies that we are relying on in Australia, the CAS review gave the Melbourne Gender Clinic study a score of 19 out of 100 in terms of its reliability. So, I mean, if you do a test in school, if your kid does a test in school and you come back with a score of 19 out of 100, I don't think you're going to feel too impressed by that outcome. But that's the basis on which we are treating children with gender confusion. Another finding was that the use of cross-sex hormones in people under 18, in children, is very, very risky. There's a carcinogenic aspect to those hormones. We know that they can have a sterilizing effect on children. And normally, if you're going to sterilize a person, you would need a very, very strong scientific medical justification for that. For example, you know, saving their life might be a justification for that. But we're doing this really on the basis of, apparently helping them through their distress. But that leads me to the third finding, which is that there isn't really any clear evidence that these medications are helping these kids distress. The tropes that we often hear around puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones reducing suicidality in these kids is not actually based on sound evidence. So a lot of activists will say to parents who have a child who's experiencing gender dysphoria, look, you are choosing between having a trans kid or a dead kid. But we do know now that that was never based on any evidence whatsoever, and that, in fact, the likelihood of cross-sex hormones actually helping in the long term that child's mental health is quite low, or at least unknown. So that's some of the findings that came out of the CAS review. Now, it's looked at pretty much every study available on the outcomes of these treatments and was able to say hands down, we can't continue really in good conscience prescribing these medications to children because there simply just is not the evidence that we need. So out of that, the United Kingdom banned puberty blockers. A number of other European countries have done the same or are considering some serious restrictions. What we see in Australia is a bit of a fobbing off of these findings, and our health minister has said that We're Australia, we follow our own guidelines, so the findings of the CAS review are not relevant to us. The fact is, Neil, that Australia based its guidelines off of the UK's original guidelines and is following the exact same protocols that the UK was following. So to say that it isn't applicable to Australia is simply not true. And it really is urgent that Australia does something in response.
Interesting when you say fobbing off of this evidence, huge evidence coming out of the UK and so many other nations now adopting those same cautionary measures. But Australians fobbing off that evidence, does that mean that there's a real ideological bent here in those who are pushing for what we're seeing?
Absolutely. I think the health minister and Australia at large is beholden to some pretty strong activist groups that have been, you know, infiltrating decision-making processes for a long, long time. And it's really important for us to recognise that these activist groups are not acting on a scientific basis, but an ideological basis. And I mean, I say that off the back of the fact that bodies like the World Professional Association for Transgender Health have now been discredited. Some of their files were leaked a month ago, and we found that all their decision-making processes were based not on evidence but on assumptions and on a strong desire to continue gender treatments based on ideology. And you know, when you look at the kind of hysteria that goes around these conversations, people being very, very upset when you would even suggest that something needs to change, or you would even suggest that perhaps there are only such thing as male and female. I think, you know, truth can stand to reason. Truth can handle a debate that is back and forth. But because it really is not based on any truth or any solid evidence, they have to resort to hysteria, to saying things like these children are going to die or they're going to commit suicide, which is really, really awful. You know, you're putting parents in a really, really tough position if they're believing that that's what's truly the case. So, yes, I think Australia does have a problem with relying now on ideology rather than science, and I think it's opening itself up to some real legal challenges in the near future.
And when you're standing on the side where we're, you know, as Christians, we talk about having a moral foundation in God's word, but there's biological foundation for this. There's all sorts of challenges around the medicalization of young people for their whole lives. You've got a standing army of volunteers. And what is it that you would like to see happen, Ashlyn, for those volunteers all around Australia, every state, every territory? What sort of activity, what sort of momentum has to build to be able to turn this around and save all of those young people from such a dreadful thing? What has to happen?
Look, I think what the government might like to happen is for no noise to really keep being made about this issue so that it can be shoved under the rug. But what we need to do is we need to let them know that this is important to us. We need to keep sending them letters, sending them emails, put pen to paper. It's really effective to write a letter these days because it's not so common. So contact your local federal MP and your local state MP, because what we'd like to see happen is both a federal response, like a banning to puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, and a state-based responses as well. We in South Australia came very, very close to an inquiry in February, Neil. As you might remember, we had our independent member, Frank Pangello, put forward a motion for an inquiry into gender dysphoria and the harms or the outcomes of medical or medicalized gender treatment in children in South Australia. That would have passed in our parliament, except for the fact that Labor decided at that time not to allow for a conscience vote. So what we need to do in South Australia is continue to, we need to write to our MPs, we need to call them. And if you look at our website, acl.org.au, we've got a number of live campaigns on this issue, which allows for you to quickly just click through and put in your details and put your name to some of our petitions. People often ask me, look, is that really effective? All I'm really doing is just sending off an email. I say it is at this point in time, because we have a lot of South Australian MPs who do actually want something to happen here in South Australia. What they need is to be emboldened and to have, I guess, a good backing from their own electorate, so that they have the courage to make a stand, and so that they can make representations to our health minister and our premier, and let them know that their community is concerned about this. The other thing that's happening here at a local level is another one of our independent members in our upper house, Sarah Game, or she's from One Nation rather, is set to introduce a motion to get rid of gender ideology from South Australian schools. And she's going to put that forward this Wednesday, it looks like. So now's a really good time to also raise your voice on that issue, because the teaching of gender ideology certainly links with the number of children that are seeking this treatment. There is a bit of a social contagion element. We know that from the research. And so there was also an opportunity for our volunteers to come along to Parliament House this Wednesday to show our support in the chambers and to get behind Sarah Game's courage to put that amendment forward. So by all means, take a look at our website and see what campaigns are live in your area and in your electorate. There are certainly opportunities to be involved.
Well, the church needs to step up and be involved. A proactive church, people who are representing their local church in their local community. That's something that really can't be coordinated all together nationally. You've got to do something in your own local community. And so there's some responsibility falls on the shoulders. People listening to this conversation all around the nation. Hey, in South Australia, you've got the Australian Christian Lobby CEO, Michelle Pearce. She's coming to Adelaide on the 6th of May. What's she going to be doing there?
She is, yep. So she's coming next Monday, and she will be meeting with as many pastors and church leaders as she can in that time. We're holding a pastor's lunch from 1 till 3 p.m. If you're interested in coming along in representing your congregation, if you are either a church leader yourself, or if your pastor is unable to make it, if you would like to come on their behalf, do come along. It'll be held at Life Christian Centre on Angus Street in the city. And we'll be talking a lot about some of these updates surrounding the CAS review. We'll also be looking at a number of federal updates to do with the freedom of the gospel in schools and religious freedom. We know that there was the religious discrimination bill, which hasn't yet been released as an exposure draft, but there is a lot of opportunity for church leaders to have delegations to members of parliament on these issues, and we really want to support any church leader who's interested in doing that. The other thing that's happening when she's here is a young adults event. So that same day in the evening on the 6th of May, we'll be gathering together young and young-ish adults to have a talk on leadership and faith, the intersection between faith and politics, and giving more of an update as well on what's happening around our nation. So we'll have both her and leader of the Colson Fellows Program in Australia come and speak with us. I think it'll be really excellent.
Okay, well, hoping that all of those gatherings where the venues will be bursting at the seams, and as we've seen in times past, when you get lots of people turn up, sometimes you've got to upgrade the venue. Let's hope that South Australian listeners today are going to respond very well there. And for more details, the website is acl.org.au. That's acl.org.au. Ashlyn Vice is Australian Christian Lobby State Director for South Australia. Ashlyn, thanks so much for another great update today on 2020.
Thanks, Dale.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.